Okay, Doug, are we rolling?
We are rolling.
Tuglin. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Dead Sailor Podcast. Oh, shit, I always mess up the intro. Today we have a very special guest. They're all special, but this one is extra special because it is another one of our athletes, a tenant athlete, Amy Morrison. Welcome to the Dead Sailor Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, Amy, you, I'm going to try to introduce you, but I would rather have you introduce yourself. But four-time national enduro women's champion, correct?
Correct.
Did I say that right?
Yep.
And then you're also you ride for Transition and a bunch of other brands, professional mountain biker, and then you also are a high school teacher.
Yeah.
Really interesting combination of all those things.
It is, yeah. But that's basically the background on who I am and what I do.
Yeah, nice. And then we also have Blake Hansen, of course.
Hello, I'm here, as I always am.
She's very tired.
Hi.
She just got back from Crankworks. I didn't go to Crankworks this year, but I'm glad I didn't personally.
Yeah.
But
you still have a vigor about you that we've all lost.
Oh, yeah. We forgot to crack the beers. I'm going to crack this right now. And then, Doug, we'll just cut that in at the beginning. We'll chop that one up.
It won't be. He never does. The last pod, your mistake was in, but it was perfect. Yeah. We just left it.
So, Amy, how are you doing? Welcome to the Pacific Northwest.
Thank you.
You've been back and forth quite often, it seems like.
Yeah,
Since you started riding for Transition.
Well, actually, no. This is like my first trip up this year. Mm. I was supposed to come up earlier in the year, and then, where I live near Tahoe, we are having just like a crazy winter. And so I was actually like, okay, sure. Like I'll come up to the Pacific Northwest midwinter. Like it actually seems like you guys were having some nice weather there. And then, so we planned some dates and then it looked like you guys got super cold and wet and rainy. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to leave like one Arctic tundra for like another. So, and it seemed like even like the media guys at Transition didn't even really want to go out. So I'm like, if people from the Pacific Northwest don't want to go out, then I probably don't want to go out.
Which is surprising because I would say that a lot of those people that work there they seem like they are unfazed by the weather.
Well, let's say some, there. Not a lot.
Okay, yeah, some.
I mean, I think it was like
Oliver. Hannah, Oliver, and Sky, who are essentially, and Miles Trainer, they're all essentially the marketing department. They're pretty ruthless.
I mean, I think it was like going to snow, so.
I think Oliver stays home.
Yeah.
Oliver, you can correct us if we're wrong. I'm pretty sure you just stay inside all winter.
He also just got an e-bike last year, so now he has no excuse. More. Yeah,
yeah. He was hitting blue steel last night on the e-bike.
Yeah.
He took the battery out, but
yeah.
Pretty sweet.
That's the cool thing about that bike, right?
Mm-hmm. You
pull the battery out, and it's essentially a trail bike.
Yeah.
Just a standard trail bike.
But, yeah.
So are you sticking through, or you're taking off after the podcast, right? Or
tomorrow morning, I'm going to do some shooting with Transition and then I'm going to take off. Yeah. And I'm like in this like weird spot where it's like, you know, I've done like some really cool rides the last couple of days with John and I'm like, oh, this is sick. But then like on the other hand, I'm like really tired and just really want to go home because I've not been home very much in like the last stretch of time.
Let's go back and, and start because it is interesting. You've had a very busy year and we can get into kind of a lot of that stuff. But so are you originally from the Reno or greater Tahoe area?
No, I'm from Michigan, actually. Oh, well, I was born in Ohio and grew up in Michigan.
Right. I just learned this and just remembered it now when you said that.
Yeah.
You're Michigan too, right, Tyler?
I am.
Michiganders.
Yes.
Midwesterners.
But you're not from the UP, right?
No, I'm from Kalamazoo.
Are you from the UP?
No, I'm not. Okay. But like that's like, I feel like everybody asks that when you say,
are you a mountain biker from Michigan?
Yeah.
Everyone forgets that the lower peninsula is like a part is Michigan also.
Well, and it's like where most people live.
Yeah, I know. But everyone's like, oh, you're from the UP. Are you from the UP? Marquette? It's like, no.
I think if I was from the UP, I maybe would have gotten into mountain biking as a kid, but
yeah. So I guess let's talk about that.
Yeah.
How did you discover bike riding?
Not until, I mean, like, you know, there's like a photo of me when I was a kid and we went on a trip to Lake Tahoe and my parents like did an excursion on the rim, not the rim trail, the Flume Trail, you know? And so I'm like on this rental bike with Lake Tahoe in the background, but I think I was like 12 or something. Mm-hmm. I barely remember it. And then, yeah, like I went to school at Clemson University on a pole vault scholarship. And ooh. Yeah, and I remember like one time my roommate came home and was like, hey, do you want to go mountain biking? And I was like, okay, can I bring my pink Huffy that I used to like ride to class? And she's like, yeah, I don't know, sure. And like we went out to this like area where people did bike in Clemson. And I remember we went down like the downhill trail. And there was like this wooden berm and I was like, people ride that? Like, that's crazy. And then we got to the bottom and had to push or ride back up. I probably pushed the Huffy and I was like, yeah, I don't want to do that again. Like, we have to push back up again. Like, I think I'm done. And, but yeah, so like, I just had like few random things like that. Like I did pharmaceutical sales right out of college and one of my locations they put me in was Denver. And I covered like all of Northern Colorado up to Wyoming and Montana. And I remember one time I was driving back from like the Vail area and I just like stopped and the guy I was dating, we rented bikes and like went up and took the chairlift up. And yeah, like there's like a photo that I should post one day as like a throwback, but I have like, you know, like bigger sunglasses, a tank top and like short shorts on, like on nice. A rental bike at Vail. So that was like, yeah, those were like some random times. But then they placed me in Sacramento. And that's where I became permanent in that territory. And that's when I bought a mountain bike. And I had done some road biking, but really was like, oh, the mountain biking looks way more fun. And I'd love to get off the road. And just bought a hardtail from Mike's Bikes and just started riding that everywhere. And they actually helped connect me with a couple girls that were really into cross country, but they kind of showed me a lot of the foothills of Tahoe. We rode a lot of those trails and then they started showing me Tahoe when that opened up. And then probably just like 6 months later, I decided
that's a motorcycle in the background. We can just Doug can try to edit that out.
No, he can't. Maybe we can just pause for a sec.
Anyways, carry on.
Never mind.
Yeah, so like 6 months after getting the cross country bike and riding all over Tahoe, I realized that I liked the downs a lot more than kind of the whole cross country vibe. And so the shop talked me into getting a Santa Cruz Bronson. And so that was like my first all mountain bike. Yeah. And just like took it straight up to North Star, crashed on live wire, cut my leg open on a water pipe. Yeah, then bought knee pads.
We're learning a lot about Hemimo really quick here.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, enduro was like starting to become popular. This is like probably 2013.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 2013. And so at the very end of the 2013 season, somebody was like, you should try enduro. There's a race at Mammoth when they used to have the Mammoth Kamikaze Games. And so that was like technically my first enduro that I ever did. Yeah.
How did you place?
I didn't finish, actually, one of my few DNFs. I flatted twice. So like the first time I put the tube in and then the second time I flatted, I didn't have like a patch kit or anything. And I just didn't really know what to do in that scenario. So I just like walked down the hill.
Mm-hmm.
And
called it.
Yeah. I was just like, okay, I don't really know what to do. I think it maybe was the last stage, but like, I don't know, like when you're new and riding and like I had a flat, like I didn't even know if I was supposed to ride on the rim. Like that felt not good for the rim. So I just stopped.
Well, as an amateur too.
Yeah. Like, well, yeah. And I, you know,
you have that to think about.
Yeah. I was like, this sounds expensive if I ride down the hill.
Yeah.
So I am curious what, you know, being a newer mountain biker, what motivated you to want to start racing? You know, I think mountain biking for women is, and I'm speaking as a man, so I don't really know, but I think it is a very intimidating sport to get into, and let alone racing, which is just an added element of intimidation. What was it about racing that was appealing to you?
I mean, I think I just was always really competitive, so I don't think I was like your normal, just like average female going about things. Like I did tons of sports in high school. I actually like begged my parents when I was in middle school because they had middle school sports, but then I also played travel soccer and did recreational gymnastics. And I remember making a deal with my dad that I like wouldn't eat desserts if you would let me play like middle school basketball and then continue to play soccer and gymnastics. And then like once basketball season was over, then it was volleyball season. And then I did the same thing with like swimming and diving and track. So it was like,
this was your dad's, like, he was cool with that.
He thought it
like,
would deter me.
He was like, yeah, if you don't eat desserts, you can play all these sports.
Well, okay, so I should back up. I had a huge
sweet tooth. Seems unhealthy.
I still had like unlimited amounts of cereal. Like I still ate a lot of cereal, but yeah, I'd like get, you know, if you wanted to get Amy to do anything, you would just say like, okay, we'll take you to Dairy Queen after. So I think he really thought that it was like, I don't know, I've never actually asked him, but I think it was like one of those things where he was like, if you're really serious about this, you have to give up something that I know would be really hard for you to
okay,
give up.
Copy yeah. That. That's
yeah. So I think it was just like one of those sort of things. Like,
does that still work to this day? Like, can, no. can I go? If you want to continue to ride the Tenet and get free sweet treats, you better win these races.
The next time we're at a race together and I'm dropping in front of you, I'm going to say, I'll give you an ice cream sandwich at the bottom if you wait an extra 30 seconds.
If it was hot out, I'd maybe take you up on that. But I, yeah, in high school, I went through like probably like my sophomore year, I really started getting like serious about, I wouldn't say serious, but started thinking more about like nutrition. And yeah, I was like really competitive. And so I wanted athletically to do the best I could because I used to, I don't think they actually know this, but they used to give me like money for like the special. And the special was always like, I don't know, something healthy or ish. And then I would just use that money instead and buy breadsticks and an ice cream sandwich. So like I definitely had a sweet tooth and would do anything to get ice cream. But then like in high school when I became really serious about wanting to do well, I just started eating healthier and I'd bring food from home. And so that was back to your original question of like, why did I want to get into racing? I think that's just something that, yeah, the competitive side of me is always going to come out in whatever I do a little bit. And mm-hmm. I think in athletic things, it's, yeah, it's pretty strong. And I do think racing, whether you are super competitive or not, like it does help you improve your skills. So like if you are new, I think one mistake women make is they think like, well, I'm new, I shouldn't race yet. And like they put off racing, but it's like, that was like the fastest way for me to improve my skills because you're surrounded by other women who are doing it and like things on a race course, like that you maybe would think, oh, I can't do that, but it's on the race course. So you're like, ooh, like I should try, or, you know, you just like put more effort into figuring things out and trying new lines and doing things that maybe scare you if you don't have that sort of race pressure to push you.
I would agree with that for sure. Especially if you're a like goal oriented person, or if you come from like high school or college athletics, which like a lot of us do, and then you lose that, it gives you something else to like continue to use as a path to progression. I feel like that was a big drive for me too at the beginning.
Yeah. And I think after college, like I did the pole vaulting in college, and after I graduated and went into like the working world, it was like I was a little bit lost athletically. Like
totally.
I ran a marathon, like what am I doing?
I also did that.
You know, it's like you don't, like you kind of are just like nobody's telling you what to do anymore. Like you don't have this like structure or these goals that you were working so hard towards, which like in some regards it was a relief because it was a lot of pressure. But on the other side, you're just kind of like, what do I do? Like, and so I feel like it was like just like a natural thing when I started getting into it. I was like, oh, like, yeah, just, I'd love to race.
Yeah. The competitiveness just was a natural, organic.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Step. That's awesome. And then did you, you know, have a mentor, or were there a lot of people or specific, you know, if you want to shout out some people that are like, oh yeah, they like helped get me to the level that I am or to progress in this direction.
Yeah.
I'm just curious about, you know, I mean, like, you know, again, being a new at racing and just getting into that, like, how do you learn other than watching other racers, but you know, are there other ways that you learned how those skills that you needed to become a four-time national enduro champion?
Yeah. I mean, I think a big part of it was like those girls that I first started riding with, like they were huge and just like showing me what was out there, and they were more cross-country focused, but it still showed me that like, yeah, like you can be competitive and like have these goals, and there's these you know, sweet trail networks out there and getting out there. So they were huge for that. And then pretty early on, I met Ron Sanchez and their family on a ride. And nice. He was like, oh, we have this property, like you should come. And, you know, next year we're going to have girls racing, so you should race. And I remember thinking like, I just started riding, like I can't race at this like invite only property. And yeah, so like having that opportunity, and then at that first TDS that I went to, which was spring of 2014, I met Teal Stetson Lee. And like, yeah, I think like she may not know this, but I think that's like the cool part, is that you have so much influence on people just by like little things that you say. And mm-hmm. I see that a lot in teaching too with the kids. It's like they grab on to things that I didn't even remember that I really said at the time. But, you know, she was like always telling me like, you have so much talent, like you're so good. Like, I know you keep crashing, but like you have a lot of speed and like, just keep at it. And like her telling me that really motivated me. And then also just kind of made me feel comfortable like being at those events, because it's intimidating, you know, when you, especially like when there's just like pro guys like all around and you're just like, do I even belong here? Like, mm-hmm. And then Joanna Peterson was another one that was at those early TDS days, and she was super cool to be around and really encouraging. So they were definitely really key to like making me feel like I, yeah, had an ability to be at that level and just to continue pushing and getting better.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
For reference, the Sanchez's are the TDS people.
Yeah.
For anyone listening who doesn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How many chicks were in the first days, like racing?
There was 10, yeah. So cool. Becky Gardner was actually, so her brother Ryan had done like the 2013 one, and she had told Ron like, you need to have a girls, you know, a girls side of things. And so she actually got hurt, so she didn't go to the first one, but she was like kind of the one that like got Ron to be like, no, you need to do this and make a girls field. And so he had the girls in 2014, which was like, I think the second real year that they had it. Like, I think they had like a real underdog year or underground year before that. But yeah, there was like 10 of us.
Sick.
Yeah.
I mean, it still feels year? Pretty underground even today, you know, like,
yeah, I mean, it's an invitational based race.
Yeah. But it's gotten like, if you had seen like the beginning days, like it's, you know, in the 2014 race was really sick. And just like from that to where it is now, you're just like, wow, this is a really cool, progression.
I haven't made it yet. And it's this cool. year, I'm definitely going to make that happen.
Yeah.
But I've just heard it's just an incredible experience to just go there and hang out and just witness the overall vibe and the party scene there. It's just like incredible, I guess. So.
Yeah.
It's a cool property for sure. Yeah. Is this your first year on that Bronson too? Was that for that first race you did?
Yeah.
Nice. Just trying to put together some of those details.
Yeah. The Bronson. And actually, they only had like that Bronson was super popular, because I think that was like the first 27.5 bike. And so it was hard for shops to keep it in stock. And Mike's Bikes actually sold me a small, like Brian, he's a good friend of mine, but he's like, yeah, you could ride a small. I'm like, every bike I've rode is like a medium. But in some regards, I think the small was maybe good, because it kind of like gave me that ability to like move the bike and kind of get a feel for the bike instead of the bike riding me me just being a passenger. But yeah, every time I'd like go on a ride, somebody would be like, is that a Bronson?
Nice.
So the shop actually just started calling me Amy Bronson.
Oh my gosh.
That's good.
Yeah.
So at what point, you know, did you start really like moving up the ladder in placements and really making a name for yourself as far as a racer?
Yeah, I think that's kind of a hard one, because I feel like I came into enduro when it was like pretty young in the States, especially for women. So I kind of like jumped in and was like having success like pretty early on. So that first TDS, I ended up third. And then, I won like a California Enduro that year. And then the next year I won a couple more California Enduro series. And then there was like the North American Enduro Cup, which was like a series. And I had some good results and won the overall for that. And so I feel like if I go back though, like, to my riding ability then, like that'd probably be like, I don't know, maybe top five at some races, but I feel like the field has gotten a lot stronger. So I was like lucky in some regards to just like kind of grow up in that like phase of like the scene getting stronger. So I had a lot of like early successes, but at the same time, like, I don't think the women's field was what it is today.
So was there just one class back then or multiple
for
beginning expert?
Pro? I mean, yeah, there was definitely some beginner sport, but like maybe pretty minimal. Like, I do feel like now there's like decent, like pretty good sized fields of like sport. I feel like women, like, I think sometimes the sport classes are not even sometimes, I think a lot of times the sport women's class is like bigger than the pro field
for sure.
So I think that's really cool to see.
Yeah.
And so as you, at what point did you start kind of racing and getting in, like going after like a national championship sort of,
or sponsorship
So I think, like, you know, when I did get like some shop support and rode a Cannondale for a season. And then from Cannondale, I got on the Marin Rabobank team, which was still like a regional team, but we had really good support from Marin, and then Rabobank like helped pay for things and gave us incentives. So that was like, that was a really good, I think that was 20, I was on that like maybe 2016, 2017. And then it kind of dissolved after 2017. And that was when I like kind of had this, like, I left the pharmaceutical job in 2017. And I was just kind of bored of pharmaceutical sales, even though it was a very cush job. I just was bored of it and wanted to do something more meaningful. And so I left and just like was like, I'll just go ride and travel for a little bit until I figure out what I want to really do. And so I just like took off, went racing. That was a year, I think it was, I can't remember what they called it, but it was like the North American Enduro Tour, I think, that year. And so I did, yeah, like some stops across the country, and they had one in Squamish and Whistler. And so just did that tour. And then at the end of that season, the Marin team kind of was dissolving and I didn't really have a ride. It was like late, you know, it was like October, November, and I didn't have a sponsor, and I was kind of asking around, and I ended up asking Lauren Gregg, who was riding for Fuji, but she was kind of like, in our time, she was kind of like this marketing, she was really good at marketing herself. And so I was like, hey, do you have any advice? Like, have you heard of any companies that want a rider? Like, I don't have a ride. And she's like, well, actually, I'm moving into the Fuji marketing role and I want to have a team next year. Do you want to be on it? And I was like, sure. Like, I don't really have any other options, but that sounds good. And so in 2018, Jimmy Smith and I were on the Fuji team together. And so we did, yeah, we did the Columbia EWS. And I feel like I did another one that year. But yeah, I went over and did one in France. And
was that your first time, like, getting in on the EWS?
Yeah, circuit? I had done one, the Crested Butte one. And I think that was 2016 or 2017. And then I had done the Aspen Snowmass one. So that was, Columbia was my first overseas one. Yeah. And
nice.
And then I went over and raced in France, in Olargues, and then came back and just did a bunch of North America stuff. And then I decided that I wanted to become a teacher. So then I actually started going to school, and it was like a hybrid program at this school that was based in Lake Tahoe. And so I was like taking classes online and racing. And then, yeah. And then I had to take some in-person ones. So I went back to Tahoe, and then at the end of 2018, Fuji's parent company went bankrupt. And so they like didn't know if they could offer me anything in 2019. So like, again, I was like in the same position, like at the end of 2018, where I was like, what am I going to do? Like, there was a chance that somebody would buy them and I would still have a ride, but there was also a chance that they would just like not come through with anything. So I ended up, just like, yeah, I was in class and this girl was like, hey, like there's a job opening at the school I teach at. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know where Dayton is. Like, I don't know. And then I went home and I thought about it and I was like, well, if I get this job, then technically I wouldn't need to student teach. So maybe I should just go apply and like interview. And so I did. And then I got the job. So that was January of 2019. And so I moved down to Carson and started teaching at the Dayton High School. And yeah, I was like going to school still for my credential, teaching for the first time. And then in my interview, I said like, oh yeah, I did track in college and I would coach track. And then of course they had a track opening. So
this is a loaded plane.
But so then I was cool. I didn't know any of this.
Yeah. So then I, started coaching, and And then finally, I think it was like in February, Fuji got bought. And so they came back and were like, hey, we can like offer you this. And I was like, okay, well, again, I don't have anything. So like, that seems good.
Yeah.
And so in like that winter was like a big winter for Carson. Usually you can ride sometimes in Carson, but like, yeah, we were getting lots of snow in Carson City. Tahoe was getting lots of snow. So I just like didn't ride. So from like January, February, March, like I hardly rode because my only free day was like Sunday. And I was just like trying to get my life together and do laundry and schoolwork and stuff. And so I didn't ride very much. And yeah, and then like April, there was still track going on. So I rode a little bit, like went to TDS. I got second behind Ray Morrison at TDS that year. And then, yeah, kind of school got out June 1st. And that was like a huge relief. I went over and raced a couple EWSs and like did okay. Like, you know, like I think 20th or something. And then came back and went to nationals. And then that was when I won my first national title. It was in 2019. And I think a lot of that success really came like because I had taken time off and like these things that I was working on skill wise, like I was able to sort of like reset and like, yeah, they just started clicking in 2019, I think is where, like I, you know, I had results before and I had speed before, but I think from 2019 on is where I really see like my riding like took off.
Mm-hmm.
And I think having, even though it was a lot of stress and I didn't get to ride, like I think that forced break was really good for my riding, honestly.
Yeah.
And I was able to sort of just come back to it with this like appreciation of like, I'm so glad to be out on my bike and like all these, like, I remember my brother, he moved to Carson City and he comes from a moto background. And, like when I would get out to ride, I'd go ride with him and like, he's really playful. And like, I feel like I was like, yeah, just following him and having fun and sort of just letting those skills that I was like trying to change about my riding, they just all kind of clicked. And then the confidence boost really came when I won nationals. And then after that, there was the EWS came to North Star, which is like my stomping grounds. It's like 50 minutes from Carson City. And that's kind of where I learned how to ride. And so I really like that like loose terrain, rocky, and it's pretty fast. And so North Star came there, which again, I like went back to work. It was in like later August, like end of August. And so I like had like the first 2 weeks of school. So I was like in school. I remember EWS asked me if I wanted to come to the shakedown ride, which was on like a Wednesday. And I was like too scared to ask for time off work because we only get two vacation days a year. And this was like my second semester teaching. So
two,
I was like,
vacation days?
Yeah, so
that's crazy.
I know. If you don't use them, they'll roll over, but
I've never really got to that point. I kind of want to get into the teaching aspect of things too. First of all, I'm just curious as to what motivated you to want to become a teacher. I think that's important to you know, set the you know.
Yeah. So I did the pharmaceutical sales right out of college for 6 years and I was bored with it. And I wanted to do something that would be like meaningful. And so like it's just like a feeling that I had. But when I did pharmaceutical sales, I'd wake up in the morning and I'd be like, if I didn't go to work today, what would happen? And I'd be like, nothing, like everything would be fine. And so with teaching, it's like definitely like, yeah, people are like counting on you to be there. And like, you play a big role in
what
you
do. Do you teach at a public school or a private school?
Yeah, a public high school.
Yeah.
And yeah, and I had my really good friend, Tasha Thomas, is an elementary teacher, but she was a teacher and that sort of like helped me like sort of learn the path and sort of see what she was doing. And I'm not going to lie, like summer's off and the school day is like 7 to 3. So like you always kind of have some daylight, which is really nice. So
did mountain biking, impact that career decision? Would you say that like, right, wanting to compete professionally as a mountain biker, ride, or having summers off, or having a big gap, swaths of time to be able to travel to races, or you know, during a race season or whatever. You know, did that impact your decision to be a teacher?
Honestly, not as much as you would think. Like it does work well because the summers are off, and that's when a lot of the racing is. But at that point, like that was, that was like 2017 when I decided, the end of 2017 when I decided to go back to figure something out. And at that point, like, I hadn't really established, like, mountain biking is going to be a career path where I'm going to make mm-hmm. money and that sort of thing. So it was more or less like this hobby that I'm really good at. And like, sometimes I win prize money, but that was like kind of it. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, in my head, it wasn't like, oh, I need to do this because it meshes well. Mm-hmm. I did think about like the fact that I do like time off. So mm-hmm. that was like a bigger mm-hmm. piece, but not like I need time off to go race.
Yeah. 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 Gotcha. Yeah. And so I guess one thing, or, you know, kind of back to the teaching thing, you know, that sort of, how have you been able to juggle essentially like these two separate lives, right? You have mm-hmm. you have this life as a teacher, and then you have this life as a professional athlete. How are you able to make those two lives coexist?
Yeah, I mean, some times of the year are easier than others. Like the summer is pretty easy, but I actually, so I've been teaching, this will be going into like my fifth year. So I did the first like 3.5 like fully there, but I actually asked for a leave of absence. So I was not teaching March, April, or May, just so that I could like really give myself a good go at racing and just traveling. And a big part of that was like, you know, I could teach the rest of my life, but I have these opportunities right now racing. And I think the hard part is that racing and being a professional biker is it can change so fast. Sure. Like whether it's on your own accord of like getting hurt, or like, you know, the industry changes and there's no budget to help support you. So like mm-hmm. that was kind of my experience going along with it. So like, yeah, I just try to keep racing as like this like fun thing that I do really well, but at the same time, if it stops, you know, being something I can do, I have something else that, you know, I enjoy and have sure. something steady. So when I'm teaching full time, it's a lot. Like it can be a lot. Like I think my riding backs off a bit. In the winter, it's a lot of like trainer rides. But my coach that I work with, Julie Young, she's like really great at taking into account like the work stress. And then also like in the winter, like I live somewhere where it snows a lot. So I do a lot of skiing, and so I take time off from the bike, and I think that's important for a number of things, but mm-hmm. I think it also works well with the teaching, like being in the heart of teaching in the winter. It's like I get a little bit of time away from the bike, and it's not always like teach, train. Right. But the spring is the hardest. Well, actually, I take that back. The fall is the hardest because I started a mountain bike club at the school I teach at. So it's like you come off this summer break where everything's like just bike centered, real cruisy, sleeping until 8, and then you're like back at work.
Sleeping in. It's crazy.
So I have to be at work at 7:15, and I live like 20 minutes away. So like,
oh, that's fun. That bass.
Yeah, that was some good bass.
Turn off the music. We're trying to record a podcast.
Oh, the woes of filming in a shipping container in a scrapyard across from a car dealership. Funny.
You're really pitching Tenet.
back to what were you talking about?
Yeah, so the fall is just kind of crazy because I started a mountain bike club, which I really enjoy, but the season is in the fall, and then I'm coming off this summer break where, yeah, like sleeping in is kind of like 8 for me. Cause I'm up at, yeah, I'm usually up at like 6:15, mm-hmm. Which is pretty expedited, honestly, I think, to get to work. But I'm up and then going to work. So it's just a lot in the fall because it's back to teaching the mountain bike club and then still doing some racing. So
yeah, it's like all three things in
one. And yep. So, but then the spring can also be tricky too, because you're like, you're trying to get into the season, and, you know, I'm watching people that just ride for a living and they're just like out having these full day trainings, and then they're probably just chilling on the couch and mm-hmm. like, you know, I'm like going to work and then trying to ride after work and then eating some dinner and going to bed and doing it all over again. So
honestly,
crazy.
It gives, I hope the takeaway from this is a lot more respect for sure. your abilities and your skill set, because it is amazing that you juggle both like all of this all at once, you know. Because do you still coach you coach mountain biking, but do you still coach track or anything like that?
I put the track to the side, yeah. Okay, after my first year of doing the track season. And the hardest part about track, it's really not the after school, because I still volunteer and do like 2 days a week. Just like I just go out there and help the hurdlers. And then, but it was the Saturday all day track meets that really just like really hurt. Yeah. You're just like a beautiful day, or even not a beautiful day, but you're just like, wow, I could be riding right now. Yeah. So that was the hard part. And like, I do really want to coach track. Like there's still a passion from, you know, my earlier years of doing it, but there'll be time down the road where I can do that. And then the mountain bike club, I started that in 2020 when there was no sports for the kids. There was honestly pretty minimal mountain bike racing going on. So I thought it was like a really good opportunity to start the mountain bike club just to get kids doing something, because yeah, they couldn't do anything. Mm-hmm. And they actually said it was okay to do it because it was outside and everybody's spaced. Mm-hmm. And so I started the club in the fall of 2020. And, you know, it's like once you get it going, then it's like, okay, well, how do I can't really like step away from this. And I love doing it, but it's just, yeah, it's like one more thing where I'm just like trying to manage and run that sort of on.
How many kids are in that program?
Last year we had like a little over 20. Nice. On the team. I think the first year it was probably like 12. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think last year, probably like 25. I don't know the exact numbers. But yeah,
it keeps growing.
Yeah. And then like, you know, it's just, I feel like I kind of get like a little bit of anxiety in the summer, 'cause you start setting up like your pit zone for NICA, and I'm like, oh my God, there's like two kids signed up. Like, why am I doing this? And then all of a sudden school starts and like a bunch of kids want to join. So
are there any kids that you don't need to say any names, but are there any kids that are in that program where you're like, whoa, there's something special going on here? This kid is going to be a mega racer one day.
No, not really. And like, I think I honestly like love that about the club. It's not like this club of shredders. Yeah. Like, it's not just like
super serious. It's just a different thing for you.
And it's like different because you'd think like I would want this like club of shredders and really competitive kids, but I honestly love that it's just like these kids that show up in jean shorts and like, you know, like just like are on like older bikes, but they're just loving it. And I think for me, that really just like makes it full circle after a season of like being around people with like $8,000 bikes. These kids are out on like $800 bikes, just like loving it. And like, you know, a lot of times I take like the slower group too, just like because it's just, I don't know, it's just like fun and super chill. And I mean, we have some good riders, but like, nothing like, you know, I just was up in Whistler and it's like, there's like 13-year-olds
on crabs.
Yeah.
I saw a clip of a 12-year-old kid today.
Yeah.
Riding a 60 footer.
Yeah. There's just like the kid scene is like insane, like the level. And, I mean, I teach in a rural area and not to say that we're, you know, there's, actually like, blanking on their house, that Asa Howe, he went to the high school that I teach at, and like he's like in the Hills gang. But like they're little shredders, and they're a little bit older now, but like they went to Dayton. But mostly it's just like just like getting kids on the first time that they've rode mountain bikes and just getting them out there and and trying to just like get them into the sport and just showing them that we live in a really cool area and there's like, you know, all these trails. And the other thing I love about biking is that it's a lifelong sport. So, you know, I've touched a pole vault because I coached pole vaulting at Dayton, but like outside of that, like you don't just like go casually pole vault. You know, and like a lot
to go get a pole vault session after work.
So I think like for me, like that was like a big part of it is like after college, I was like, well, what do I do? You know? And like, you just like start jogging and decide to sign up for a marathon. But like, there's way more like fun things you can do on a bike and like the places it takes you. And that's kind of my goal for the mountain bike club is like, I just want them to like get into the sport and just see how fun it is and have like a passion for that.
Yeah. I am curious. Sorry, I don't know. I'll let you get.
I had one too, but you can go first.
Actually, go Blake.
Oh, I get to go first this time. Look at me. I was just going to ask if there's any parallels between starting that club and what you're offering these kids and like the entire idea behind getting into teaching from the beginning.
Yeah, I think when I think back to like when I was growing up, like I was definitely able to do a lot of those sports because my parents supported it and helped me do those things. But I mean, there was a pole vault coach that I had that he was at a neighboring school, and like pole vault is getting more popular, but like it was still like, you know, you just didn't, every school didn't just have like pole vault poles and a pole vault coach. And so we didn't have anybody at my high school to coach me. And so I would go to this neighboring school and he would just coach me. I'd like meet him out there in the summer and he would like never let me pay him. And so it was just like one of those things where I was like, when I get into the opportunity to do so, like I want to give back in that way.
Yeah,
like
that's cool.
You know, just, yeah, be able to help somebody out, help the kids out. And yeah, I think the club is like, I don't get paid to do it. It's not like a school, you know, like it is through the school, but it's not like a school paid thing.
Does the school have a NICA team?
Well, so that's what I do is I go through NICA. Okay. Yeah.
Copy that. Sweet.
Yeah. So it's just like something that I wanted to do to just give back, not only to the sport, but just like for myself to like so many people have helped me in my path through athletics. And I think it's just important to give back somehow.
Well, I think about like when I was growing up, some of these like really impactful people and teachers are incredibly impactful to just overall development as a teenager, as a kid. And I remember when I was first getting into riding BMX bikes, I had my fifth grade teacher, Mr. Shipley. Shout out Mr. Shipley. I don't know if he's around. I don't know if he's still teaching or what he's doing. He might be, hopefully he's retired.
Yeah, hopefully.
But he just like noticed that I loved bikes. I would draw pictures of bikes and I would, you know, wear biking t-shirts and talk about it all the time and whatnot. And after school, you know, I grew up in a really rural part of Michigan. And my mom or dad or whoever would bring my BMX bike and let me stay after school. And there's like some curbs that we'd hit and a little stair set that we'd jump. And I just think he noticed like, oh, you're like, Tyler's really into bikes. He was a road biker. He was like really into road biking, but he just was like, oh, here's a connection I can make with this kid. And he brought me his road bike jersey one day and he's like, hey, I want to give this to you. I used to race road bikes. This is what I raced in.
Yeah.
And it was so such a really cool, just sort of impactful moment. And he was like my favorite teacher ever growing up. You know, yeah. I was like, I love that teacher. He's the best. Like it was so cool to have him do something like that. So it's really cool. Yeah. To hear, you know, you make those efforts. Cause there's a lot of teachers out there that don't, they just see it as a job or a paycheck or whatever, and they don't go beyond, above and beyond. So by
a lot of teachers doing it for that paycheck, that huge paycheck. So
it depends on where you're teaching.
Well, it's like anything I think in life is that you can just get into that rut or that groove and like, you know, like it is, it's just like going to work, showing up so that you can go home at the end of the day. And I think, you know, there's a lot of teachers out there that do an amazing job of going above and beyond for like not that big of a paycheck.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Like I honestly, like in my school, it's like the math teacher staying after school to like help kids on more math that the kid's just going to get upset at them for. Yeah, like, right. I don't know how they do it. Like, thankfully I teach like more fun subjects in my opinion.
I was going to ask, what is that, by the way? What do you teach?
I teach health education and health science. Nice. And then we're a small school, so sometimes I get like a weights class, or this year I'm going to teach a women's fitness class. So nice. I kind of get a little bit of variety, but like overall more fun compared to math. So, but yeah, like there's a lot of teachers that go above and beyond, but like, you know, there's a lot of teachers that just kind of go and are in the routine and, you know, they're not doing anything crazy. And I think part of that is because we all get paid the same, whether you do something crazy or you don't. Like it's all just based on how many years you're there, and it's not based on like how much effort per se you're putting in. Right. So I think that's just going to be a product of that system. Unless that changes. But yeah, like I think having worked the pharmaceutical sales and having that like sort of check in, check out sort of job, like I realized the importance of just doing something that you're more passionate about. And like, there's definitely days where I show up and I'm like, oh my gosh, like I don't have the energy to do this. But you know, most of the time I'm trying to think of like fun ways to like help them learn and then just make it engaging for them, because I think we've all had that class where we're like, this is so boring and you don't pay attention. But then you get that teacher that like, I had an English teacher, which English I'd say is one of those subjects you usually like want to check out on. And like, he was like awesome. And I'm like really glad that he taught me good English. Like I am like very thankful for that. So, I just try to remind myself like of those sorts of things. And then, sometimes the kids will like tell me like, or at the end of the year or semester, I try to say like, what was most impactful that you learned? Or like, what was your takeaway from this semester? And like some of the things that they write back, I'd be like, oh, wow. Like, okay, they really liked that. Or like, they really learned a lot from this. And I think doing more of that is really helpful for me to just know like the things that you can have an impact on and like the things they pick up on. And I think that's all.
Mad respect. For as a professional mountain biker, you have every excuse in the book to not go above and beyond, but the fact that you do is like, people should know that. That's for real.
Thanks. I mean, and like people have asked me, especially this year, because I've been having, you know, a really good season, like, oh, are you going to go back? And I am going back. And like, I think a lot of that is like, there's a lot of things that go into it. Like, but I really like where I am teaching and I really like that connection that I get to have with the kids. And I think for me personally, like not just being like my identity is all wrapped up in being a biker. I think that can be really tough, honestly.
I will say, and I can't speak for all of your sponsors, but I think that for me personally, for my position, I would much rather see you continue to do what you're doing as being a teacher and then having mountain biking supplement or be just the passion side of things and racing, being passionate about racing and continuing down that path. I would, I don't want to say I would be disappointed, but I would much like, you know, I would just much rather see, I think that's a better story. It's just a better, a look, and it's just a good, good feeling thing. Racer, like people that are just all mountain bike, all this, all racing, all whatever, all the time. You know, it's, it, you can't really relate to it sometimes, you know, as just a general consumer or a person that's like watching mountain biking. I feel like you're much more relatable and there's a lot more respect that can be given to you because of this fact that you are a full-time school teacher, you know?
Yeah.
That's great.
No, I see that and I feel that. And I think just on my side of things, I think I like the balance because like we said, like you never know, like you could get hurt or maybe I just don't perform as well. I mean, all these like little shredder kids are coming up and, you know, quickly they're going to be the ones on the top steps. And it's like, I don't have to have my whole identity wrapped up in that, like I'm a mountain biker and I have to do well and just trying to hold on to that. Like, and then I think, I think the fact that like, I do enjoy being in the classroom and being able to have those connections and it does make me feel like more down to earth and like real and not just like, like I had a really hard time when I was in college with pole vaulting, like when I wasn't doing as well in pole vaulting and I had my identity kind of all wrapped up in like, I'm here on a scholarship, like I have to be a really good pole vaulter. I'm letting everybody down if I don't pole vault well. And then like pretty much as soon as I like stepped out of college and I was like, wow, most people don't even know what pole vaulting is. Like, like it does not matter that much. And I think that's like sort of teaching is a bit of that anchor for me of like, yeah, like mountain biking's rad and like I do really cool things with it. But at the end of the day, like there's way more to life than just biking.
For sure.
Yeah. I was curious, do any of your students know anything about your mountain bike career or who you are outside of the classroom?
Yeah, I think like, well, I do remember when I first started teaching, like they, of course, like all like Instagram looked me up. And so like coming into teaching, like a lot of the kids that looked me up, like knew that I was like this mountain biker. And then, yeah, I usually like share in the beginning of the year with them. But like, I think word of mouth, like a lot of them are, like that's, I'm a mountain biker. And then taking the leave of absence, I told them why, which my school district was really supportive of as well. So like, it that's wasn't great. Like, I just like shadily was like, I'm going to take a leave of absence. Like I asked them, I said, I want to go race these races. Like, can I take this leave of absence? And so everything like was just out there that I was going racing. And then, you know, in the world of social media, like it's just all out there as well. Yeah. So, so a lot of them do. And like, yeah, a lot of them think it's cool. I think some of them, you know, maybe they do think it's cool, but probably wouldn't tell me. And then, yeah.
And then some of them just don't even care.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? There's definitely a portion of that, but like, yeah, there's that, you know, like,
I bet you get some street cred in the
halls. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. A little bit. And, you know, some of them follow me. And so they're, you know, they'll like comment on my stories. That's and fun. Stuff. They usually don't comment on the post. I don't know if they're just like shy to like put a mm-hmm. comment post on there, but they usually like DM me and are just yeah. like, you know, good job, or like, that's so cool. And,
yeah.
You know, oh, a couple of them are like, when I graduate, can I go tour around with you?
I'll be your mechanic.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine having my Instagram be full of like youths.
Yeah. I mean,
talking to me in the DMs, I would probably censor myself a lot more.
I mean, don't really know. You have a lot of followers. So
I mean, I know you probably have a lot of youths.
But yeah, it's not like there's children in my DMs saying, you're awesome.
Well, I think like, cool. I think it's that's like cool, a lot though. Of them. It was like a step to like send me that, you know, and it's like yeah. the ones that are like really comfortable with me now, maybe like once you cross that line, they get like a little too comfortable sometimes, mm-hmm. but
oh, sure.
like you start hearing about like their whole personal
yeah.
relationship drama. Like, yeah. But,
you're like, you need to remember I'm,
yeah, I'm your health teacher. I'm your teacher.
But yeah, no, it was a little bit like, you know, when I started teaching, knowing that like my profile was public, but at the end of the day, like I'm sharing stuff that I would share with them anyway. Yeah. So
nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. Now, actually I would like to talk a bit about, traveling around in racing EWS. You had a yeah. really big year this year. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk a little bit about sort of, your experiences racing that and traveling yeah. to new places and racing on all kinds of different terrain and
surfaces.
Yeah.
Mixed surfaces.
yeah. So I guess I'll just like start it off. Somebody actually asked me recently kind of how I pick the races that I go to. And, I think it's a bit of a blend of like, I like to go to new places. So like, that's a box that I try to check, like trying to go to new countries, but yeah, just even places in the United States. And then I like to throw in things that push me. So obviously EWS, which is now UCI EDR.
It is.
yeah.
Keeping... Wait, they rebranded to EDR?
Yeah. What's the EDR part?
It's just like the abbreviation.
So it's like not Enduro. EWS.
It's like anymore. Like cross country is like XCO. Oh yeah, it's not EWS anymore.
Enduro.
Oh.
It's just like the
it's like the World Cup version.
Okay.
Yeah, it's it. Like it's technically called Enduro, Enduro World Cup.
Get it?
Yes.
Do you know I got it. EDR? Don't you get it?
I mean, they should have just abbreviated it U or EURO because yeah. they're like all in Europe. Yeah, but
right.
they just announced the next schedule for next year. I don't know if you guys saw it. But
I did not.
Literally, no. There's 9-10 stops. And they're all in Europe. And then the last one, it says outside of Europe.
They didn't even announce where it's at yet.
Well, they haven't announced the Europe ones, but it's like literally all Europe. And then the last one is outside of Europe.
It's funny. Like, the rest of the
like,
world?
So a world series. And then you just basically say not Europe for one of them. Like, but huh. Anyways. So yeah, so I try to, you know, throw a couple of those in there because I feel like the only way that you can really get better in the world is like being at those world events. And then... yeah, just like some fun ones that I just maybe have been to in the past and just know that they're a good time. And so, yeah, so that's kind of like how I try to pick my schedule. And then when I went on with Transition this year, they are super chill and cool. And they're just like, yeah, we just want you to do what you want to do and like maybe get some races in with Marco. And I was like, okay, easy enough. So Marco and I chatted about it. And I was really on the fence about going to Tasmania just because it was like so early in the season. It was like end of March and we had a historic winter, second biggest snowfall. Mm-hmm. So like there was minimal biking going yeah. on. And so I was like, I don't know if we should go. And then like pretty close to last minute, I was just like, let's go. And he's like, sick, let's do it. And so we decided to go to Tasmania. And so before those races, I actually went to New Zealand for like a little over a week because I'd always wanted to go to New Zealand and rode in Queenstown in the South Island and then headed over to Tasmania. And those two races... I think I was like, I want to say 16th and 19th. But I had some top 10 stages. And so that was like pretty cool, like as a takeaway of like, okay, like I have the pace, but like, overall my racecraft wasn't just fully there. And some of it was like fitness. I think the descending in Medina, that was the first stop. And there was like a pretty long stage from the top, and like my arms, like, you know, it was just like everything I could do to hold on towards the bottom. So I think there was a bit of like arm fatigue from that one. And then made Derby, it ended up being like really, it rained a bunch and it was really not necessarily muddy, but like everything was rolling super slow. And I made like a couple like sort of, I call them like rookie mistakes, but like kind of that like racecraft, like on one of the stages, the second stage, the bushes were all wet. It wasn't actually raining on race day, but pedaling up, my hands got like covered in water from the bushes. And then it was kind of cold at the start of stage two.
Oh, woof.
And then my hands went numb. Oh. And like, I always usually bring like a second pair of gloves, but like I didn't. And so, yeah, on stage two, on some of the chattery stuff, my hand just like blew off the bike, and like I didn't crash, but like, yeah, it was kind of a big slowdown to try to get back on track. And then I flatted after stage three, which like, you know, we didn't have a factory set up. So when I got to the pits, I was just like changing the tire and like frantic and like stressing. And then I read my start time for stage four wrong. So like the minutes, I wasn't looking at the hours. I was just like looking at the minutes and like, I thought that it said 19 after, but it was really like 20, or I think it was 39 after. But I read stage five time instead of stage four. So like, I like sprinted up, just dumping energy, thinking that I was going to be late to my start. And then I get to the start and all the girls in front of me were there. And I was like, is there a delay? And they're like, no. And I was like, looking at it, I was like, oh my gosh, I just read stage five.
Enduro is so crazy for all these reasons. Like,
it can be, it can be stressful for sure. Yeah.
Like, there's, I mean, there's so psychological aspect
much
of it
going on compared to any other type of racing.
I felt like I dumped a bunch of energy and then just like, you know, just didn't have as good of a stage after that one. And then kind of came back for the last one. But so, yeah, so just like little problems like that. But like on the world stage, like all of those kind of add up to be a bigger deal. Mm-hmm. Unless you're like one of the top ones, I feel like they can kind of get away with stuff like that. But for me, I've realized to get a top 10 stage, like I really have to be pushing it. It's not like this, like, oh, I can just chill a little bit. Like, I have to be on it. And so yeah, I had some good takeaways, came back from that. And then it was Sea Otter, and I decided to do all three events at Sea Otter. So I did Enduro, which the timing of them is good for that. Like, Enduro is obviously like my thing. So like having that first and getting that out of the way was like good. And so I ended up taking the win in the Enduro. And then dual slalom, I signed up and I just had like zero expectations. I did Crankworx dual slalom the previous year, but like it still wasn't like, oh, like dual slalom's your thing.
Yeah, 2022 was your first year of dual slaloming.
Yes.
I think I remember talking about this because it was mine too.
At Whistler, probably. At Whistler, yeah. I was like, oh my God, I'm like nervous about gate starts. Yeah. Like, I'm shaking.
Which are really hard, actually.
Yeah. And I was actually pretty happy I was in top eight at Crankworx Whistler last year, which was like a nice little confidence boost, and for got some Red Bull coverage, which was pretty sick. And then, but yeah, but like at Sea Otter, I had like no expectations again. And then I remember Ella Connolly was there, and we did our qualifying runs together, and she was like a little bit in front of me, but like, you know, I still didn't know. And then I saw like the qualifying sheet and I qualified fourth, and I was like, oh my gosh. And like Seattle, like tons of people do it.
A lot of people show up for
Seattle. It's like the biggest fields of my season are usually at Seattle. And so I was like, oh my gosh, I'm like fourth out of like 40 girls. Like, it's crazy. And then, yeah, just going through the qualifying brackets, like I just felt like I was maybe getting faster, more comfortable with it. The bottom, I think, definitely suited me. It was like these like grassy corners and sprinting, which is something I think is a strong suit of mine. And then all of a sudden I was like up against Jill in the semifinals, and I just kind of was like, well, this is cool. Like, and dropped in and then ended up winning the first heat, and like everybody went crazy. That's like, so people sick. Were like high fiving me on the way back to the shuttle. And I was like, oh my God.
I mean, beating Jill in anything is
she's
so impressive.
A legend. And so then we get back up, and of course I'm just like, oh my God. And then I drop in, and there was like this mud boggy spot, and,
is it on both sides?
Both tracks,
both sides.
But like, I really like pushed into it, and like, I didn't even realize it. And I got like a little sketchy on the open corner, but like, she started pulling away, and I don't think you should ever give up, but I was pretty tired. So when she like was pulling away, I kind of dogged the last corners and didn't really sprint them. But then when I got up into the consolation round with Michaela, I was in the gate and my bars were actually crooked. And like, that was the first time I ever rode that bike. So like, it never really had like a break-in ride. So I just think everything wasn't like totally tight on it. And so my bars were like crooked and I was like, oh my God, like, let me fix this. So like, I think in that little like bog section, I think they turned. Because I didn't go down that whole run. So like, I think they just like twisted, which made me feel kind of off and not totally not on it. But
crazy.
But yeah, but then went up and went against Michaela and ended up getting third. So that was cool. And then downhill was on Sunday. And yeah, Jill's always super fast on that course. And but yeah, I was, I think just like 2 seconds off of her. So I was in second. So yeah, that was like, that was
a great sea otter.
Yeah. Yeah. Sweet sea otter. And then TDS was the following weekend and, ended up winning that. And, yeah, that one was pretty sick. Really fun. Yeah. So, we talked about that earlier, but yeah, it's always, it's funny cause I've only won twice there, but like everyone thinks that I've like won like so many years. Like the girls were all like, oh, how many wins is this? And I'm like, two. And they're like, really? And
just because, like, you've been there a lot.
Yeah. I think I forget how many, but like probably like that was probably like my eighth TDS or something, maybe. Yeah. So but yeah, so did that and then just had like a week at home, and then I took off for Europe and raced Transmadeira, which was super fun, but those trans races are really hard. So it was 5 days, and I think pretty much every day we climbed at least 5,000 feet, but like one of the days was like 7,000 feet. And then they shuttle you like once or twice a day.
So much.
So you descend like double that at least every day. So, which is sweet. There's like so many trails, purpose built mountain bike trails there. The island's really fun for riding. But on day, so Morgan Joinier, she's French, she was actually winning. The first 2 days and the third day, maybe. And then the fourth day, I won the fourth day, but I got sick, like got back to camp. And like, honestly, like the whole day, I hardly ate anything. I threw up, I had diarrhea. And so I got back to camp and like you camp, like that one was a beach camp spot. And I was just like, I looked at my tent and I was like,
That's something that's notable of that, of the trans like races,
is you're camping.
You're camping the entire time. Most people are camping the
working
entire time.
Working that hard during the day and then going back
and sleeping
which
in
like
tent,
camping.
You know? Yeah.
I'm fine with sleeping in the tent. It was more like the noise, and like my tent happened to be like the first row. So like I always got like the party people, like noises. Yeah.
And there is that element of it too. Some people are there to take it kind of seriously, and then other people are there to just fuck off
time. And yeah, party. And honestly, like I'm just like an 8 hour, like I need 8 hours of sleep, like even if I'm just being social, like like I need sleep. And like I was getting like 5-6 hours maybe after these big days.
Just break it down.
Yeah, so then I get back to the camp and you know everybody's like grabbing food and things, and I just like look across the street at a hotel and I'm like, I'm doing it. I'm going to the hotel, which was like the best decision ever because I was sick all night. Like I like took a nap immediately at like 6 o'clock and then woke up at like 8 and then tried to eat something, but then I threw it up and then I went to bed and then I woke up.
Was it like food sickness?
Yeah. What happened?
I don't know. Like there was like a lot of cows that, like roaming. And so maybe like my water bottle got some like dirt on it, and I don't know, or it could have just been like exhaustion. I have no idea, but like spent most of the night like throwing up around the toilet. And then I remember like Marco had to go home because he had concussion symptoms, but I remember messaging him being like, I don't know if I can finish. Like I have no energy. I hardly slept. And he was just like, oh, like, you know, just do what you can, you know, and like, hopefully you can finish. And so I ended up going out, like didn't eat breakfast. Like, so hadn't really ate anything in like a whole day. And then like, I just remember getting on the bus in the morning and just being like, I'll just like go stage by stage and just, and everybody's really tired the last day. So like, I remember there was like this like slightly uphill fire road. The wind was blowing, but like everybody's just walking. You're just like so tired. You're just like, and I'm going to walk. But you know, I've seen everybody else. Like you're just like, okay, like they're doing it. And you know, I'll just continue. And I think I ate like 6 gummy worms like the whole day. Like that was like
God,
all
dude.
I could eat. And then, I you know, I finished, and I actually, the last three stages, the first two, I had, like, no energy, but then the last three, like, I actually started having fun and, like, feeling pretty good, and then, yeah, we finished, and they don't tell you the results until awards dinner, and so I went back, they put you up in this really nice hotel the last night, and so we were, like, at the pool just chilling, and everyone's like, how do you think you did? And I'm like, honestly, I have no idea, but, like, just finishing was, like, amazing, right. Yeah. And then, and Morgan, I should also say Morgan did crash and hurt her shoulder. So like she was like injured the last day as well. And so her pace really came back a lot. And I think she actually ended up having like a fracture in there. So for her to just finish too, was like also
legendary.
Like, yeah. And so, but anyways, we go to the like awards dinner and yeah, they call up the pro women and they said her name second. And I was like, oh my gosh, you have to be kidding. So I ended up taking the win. That's and yeah, that was really cool. Mostly just because I feel like that was like a huge like mental push for me to just even have showed up. Like somebody even said to me, they're like, oh man, if I would have gotten a hotel one of those nights, I just would have not woken up the next day. Like at least in the tent, you're like, okay, I'll get out of here. Yeah, like I'm in a tent, right, but right. In a hotel room with a pool, you might be like, yeah, I'll just go to the pool today. Yeah. But, so I did that. And then from there I went to finale and I had like a whole week of nothing. And then it was like race week the next week. So like I didn't ride bikes for like at least 4 days, just was like recovering and, and then it was, getting into the race week for the, World Cup that was at, it was actually technically Pietra Ligure, but that like week leading into it, I wanted to do like non-bike things as well. So like we rented mopeds and went sailing and just fun. Like, yeah, just had fun and like, that's like part of like, yeah, I don't want it to just be like, I'm only here to be a racer.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Since I'm not on a factory team, I kind of can
go
sailing before the race. And
mm-hmm. Transition is like one of the best teams to ride for that kind of, they don't care, man.
Yeah.
And they're so, like, are you happy? Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, cool. That's what like Lars texts me before a race. He's always like, have fun, you know, like that's his, like his message to me. So yeah. But then in Pietra, like, I started off, I had like a top 10 stage and then was just having some good stages and I ended up 13th and I actually crashed on the second to last stage. So like, I felt like, yeah, realistically I could have been like 11th maybe, but I mean, that's part of racing, but 13th was definitely like, wow, like top 10 was sort of like where I wanted to be. And so to be like so close, I was like, I was supposed to go home after Pietra and race North American Enduro Cup in silver. And I was, you know, there, and I was thinking like, well, how many times do I get to just like race world at the world level? And I'm already in Europe and there's two more coming up. So I decided to stay. And so I went to Leogang, which is where they had World Cup downhill, cross country and enduro, which that was another like sort of like really cool thing to be able to watch the World Cup live, the downhill.
I bet.
And even so the cross country, like that's pretty exciting to watch them live. And so, yeah, so I went there and then I got another 13th, which was also cool. And then went to Val di Fossa and had like some really good stages at Val di Fossa. But the first one, they had these like grass ski hill corners, which like, when do you ever practice grass ski hill corners? And I just like pushed it a little too hard and slid out and lost a lot of time trying to carry my bike up. But then after that, I had some like, some really good stages. So I was happy with that. I ended up 17th on that one.
Yeah.
And then I came home after like 7 weeks in Europe, which was
so long.
Really nice. And then, I was home for like a week and then flew back to Michigan to get a little Michigan time in before going down to North Carolina, which is where they had nationals this year, which was a new venue. It's like pretty much a brand new bike park down there at Rock Creek. And yeah, didn't really know what to expect at all. Like you can watch videos online, but even videos online, it's like they have no leaves there in the winter. So it looks totally different in the summer when there's leaves on all the trees. But went down there and it was super humid and hot, which I knew was going to happen because I went to school down there, which Clemson's only like an hour from where that nationals location is. But yeah, so it was super humid. They get afternoon thunderstorms. So it was actually like sort of dry when we got there, but then the afternoon thunderstorms started stacking up each day. And so it got pretty muddy. But the backside of that place, they built a bunch of new trails for the enduro and they were actually like steep loamers. I was like, I don't think I've ever raced trails like this. Like it kind of felt like I was just on like somebody's, you know,
private
secret. Yeah. That's cool. Lomer. Like one of them was like really steep, which in the dry-ish, like perfect conditions, it was totally manageable. But then it like poured rain, and I actually didn't go back out and practice it another time after the rain, which I was like really nervous about. Like, man, did I make a mistake? I should have gone back out there. But they ended up canceling that stage because I think it would have just been like a slip and slide.
Oh, they just ditched it entirely.
Yeah, it was like, wow. It was definitely slippery. Like a couple of the girls went out and had GoPro footage of them just basically just
sliding all the way down.
Yeah, and then just sliding. So it would have just been like, who can stay on their bike or slip and slide the best.
Who can slide the fastest.
Yeah, who can slide the fastest.
It'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I didn't really know, like, you know, just like not sort of my typical like style of trails, but... yeah, just tried to like think back to like, you know, having had a lot of experiences like in the world scene, but then just racing kind of all over, just like try to think of these times of like, okay, like, cause I sometimes I peg myself as not like a wet mud rider, but I have had some really good, like in Colombia, I was 13th and that was like a total mud fest. And there's been some more recent times where, yeah, I've had some results where I'm like, wow, like I didn't think that was like my thing. So I try to just like be really positive with myself, like you can ride the wet. Like, and another thing is like most of the riding I do is like really fast, like Tahoe is high speed, and so I think sometimes when I get on like muddy or even just like trails here in Bellingham, it's like steeper and slower, but like my mind is like, oh my god, you're going so slow. But like that's the pace that you have to ride it.
Yeah, because if you go any faster you will die.
Exactly. Yeah. So like I think sometimes I get in my head on different tracks like that, so I just like try to be really positive and just like and like the two muddy stages were like the ones that I put the time into the field on, really. And then we raced the downhill course, which was, I thought was like, yeah, a good advantage for me because I think I was like the only one that sent this like big step down. So like confidence wise, I was like, okay, like I know that I'm hitting like most of the features. So, so I think I'll do well there. And yeah, I ended up taking the win at that, which was pretty sick. Yeah, fourth time. Which was like nice because the other three were all at Winter Park. So like, I could be like the queen of Winter Park, but it was nice to like get
it's
it.
It's easy to do well at Winter Park for sure.
Yeah, I
such
mean,
a good spot.
Yeah, and I liked Winter Park and I liked the riding there, but it was like a nice confirmation that like, okay, you're not just like fast on.
You know, at Winter Park.
At Winter Park. Yeah, or
all
like,
my best results are ever at Winter Park.
Well, yeah. And like if they came to North Star, like, yeah, I'd probably do pretty well at North Star. So, but yeah, so that was nice. And then I got home for like a day and then went up to Crankworks and like definitely went up to Crankworks with the mindset of like, I'm just doing these events because like I picked Air DH and Dual Slalom because those were like the fun ones. And then in Air DH, I ended up getting third, so I got on a Crankworks podium, which, like...
Yeah. Another mud race.
Yeah, and it was actually muddy, that was, so...
It was like
I think it ended up being very, like, lent to your favor in terms of being an enduro racer, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I'd heard people complaining about, like, being more, like, physical, like, you had to pedal more.
More physical than it already usually was.
Yeah, I mean, I got seventh in it last year, so... I'm definitely not the best jumper. Like I went out with Tilly, who's on the Transition Factory team, like, and it was my first run, but it still doesn't change anything. She's like throwing no handers and like whipping and just like being all sick.
Hannah's previous protege. Yeah. Who is now Jill's protege.
Yeah.
Who is now basically Jill Jr.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, she's just like buttering the A-line jumps and I'm just like, yeah, okay. I don't feel like I'm very sick at all. But I think like my strength on that Air DH course was probably like holding speed in the corners. Mm-hmm. And then definitely when you like can get on the pedals and I can clear the jumps. And like, I think the mud maybe was actually kind of nice because then I didn't have to like brake tap any of them. Mm-hmm. Like I was just like kind of just hitting
just
them like
you can
perfect.
Hit it.
Yeah. So yeah, so that was like super cool. And
pretty
then,
sick.
Yeah.
Third place is impressive, especially in that field.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a pretty stacked field. So I was stoked on that. And then, dual slalom didn't go quite as well for me. I kind of messed up qualifying and had to go against Luis in the round of 16, which she went on to like beat Jill and get second. So she was,
how do you do?
Did
you get like eighth or something?
I mean, I think technically it was like 12th. That's what I qualified. So,
that one was also messed up though. The qualifying.
Oh yeah.
From the first day, man, we were
Well, like, we got like one run on the dry course, and there was like a lot of rhythm on it. And like in my qualifying run, I tried some new rhythm on the one side and just like came off a double and just like locked up the brakes to try to make the flag in time and got a little squirrely. Yeah. So, but it was still fun. And I definitely left there kind of being like, man, I want to do more Crankworx events and whatnot. And then.
So do you think you might try to do the tour next year if possible?
I don't know. It's like such a hard question. Yeah. I mean,
especially for you being so, like, you've had a lot of success in enduro. Doing the Crankworx tour kind of does mean
it's definitely
on the other stuff.
Different. Yeah. Different training. And for me, it'd be like, you know, I'd have to learn pump tracking a lot. And it's different from enduro in that it's so explosive. The events are these very explosive power events. Whereas in enduro, like, you still want to be explosive, but it's for longer periods of time. And then you just have these like big days on the bike, which are going to be counterproductive to being super explosive as an athlete.
Right.
But it's tempting. I mean, cause it's, yeah, it's like, it's fun and exciting. Like, the weeks of Crankworx seem like, yeah. And you do have to have endurance in the fact that like you have a whole week of racing.
It's a but different kind of discipline.
Yeah. So I don't know. I would say like, I kind of came away like thinking about it more, and then they announced like the almost exclusive Europe tour of the World Cups, where I'm like, I don't know if I want to spend that much time in Europe. Yeah. So they haven't announced the locations, which I think will be kind of telling for me. So I do think a part of it is like going to new places. So if they release this like schedule where it's like a lot of cool places in Europe that maybe I haven't been, where I'm like, okay, that would be really cool to like get to these locations. But it's so expensive over in Europe is the other part. And then, yeah, like Crankworx, like if they do the same stops that they always have, like I haven't been to Rotorua, I haven't been to Cairns. So like that would be cool in that regard. So I don't know. I'm kind of like all over the map in my head and just sort of
see what Amy Mo gets up to next
year. Yeah, it'll be a surprise for us all. Nice. I don't really know.
Same, honestly.
having traveled around and raced in so many different places, is there a place that you would go back to just to ride your bike because you're like, oh, this place is just incredible, I need to go ride there again?
Yeah, I mean, I do think Madeira was really cool. I love Finale Ligure. Like, that's just like a place where if that one's on the map next year for the World Cup, I would go. And I feel like it's a little bit unique in that like they have so many trails there that you usually don't race the same trails. So like this year, they were all like different trails than they've ever raced before. In the past, it's always been different trails with the exception of like DH Men, which was always historically the last trail that you would race. But yeah, it's not like Val di Fossa. Like, they've been to Val di Fossa so many times and it's the same trails. So like, to me, that's like, I don't need to go back to Val di Fossa. It's amazing. The Dolomites are beautiful. If you've never been, you should probably go. But like, Finale is just like this place where it's like, especially as sort of like on my own, like you can just like fly in, take the train. It's not that expensive. The food's amazing. You're on the Mediterranean. There's like 100 shuttle companies. So it's like really easy to get up the hill and ride the trails. And it's just like this cool place that I would keep going back to for sure. Yeah.
Sounds like we should go.
Yeah. I like, honestly, take like people ask me, and that's kind of like where I say like, I would go there and I'd go back with you. So yeah.
Well, if enough people buy pedals, I can take you guys there.
Everyone, we're having a great deal on pedals.
Yeah.
It's retail, but you get to watch a cool video.
Europe is a really fascinating place. I've been there riding twice now. I rode in France one time. Morzine. I went and rode Morzine. Very gnarly. That's the other thing, is it's similar to British Columbia, where there are some of the most technical, gnarliest trails you could ever imagine that are a part of a mountain bike park or just a public trail network. We also went to Salzbach Hinterglemm, which I think Leo Gang is attached to. It's in that general area.
So we raced part of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that area was really cool and very different also. There was a mix of all kinds of different stuff. But the thing that I thought was so cool about Europe in general was you'll be riding a bike park or whatever, and then all of a sudden there's just sheep.
Yeah.
Just standing on a berm. One time I was riding with Billy Lewis, and we were riding this snaky Burmy track down one of the bike parks there. That's and there was cool. literally a sheep standing on the berm, and Billy just like roasts this corner and sprays the sheep, and the sheep didn't move an inch. Yeah. He's like, oh, I did a sheep ride or whatever. I don't know. It was
That's
pretty
cool. But I almost thought cool you were going to say like in the middle of nowhere on top of a mountain, there's like a little like
a restaurant
cafe.
Yeah. No. And that is the other thing. You go up and there's this like beautiful old rock brick building, whatever. And there's
and somehow they have food stocked in there. Yeah.
Food and coffee. And it's insane.
Sounds crazy.
And then the other weird part is you go up to one peak, you look over the backside. Oh, there's another ski resort over there. Mm-hmm. And then you get on that chair and you go to that peak over there.
Oh, you can just
there.
Take chair rides?
Yeah. And then that's cool. There's another ski resort.
How do they do it? They just let you on?
The Alps are just, I don't know.
Yeah, it's I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you do typically have to have, like, some sort of ticket, but, like, they consider, like, the gondolas as public transport sometimes. So, like, it's not that expensive sometimes. Crazy. But
you can buy, like, in Morzine, if you bought a day ticket at this resort, it got you to like three other resorts that were also in the general area.
You can just public transport through the mountains. That's crazy.
Yeah, in some areas they'll get you in price other places.
Yeah.
Like Switzerland's so expensive.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah,
but it is a really cool place. I would love to go back to Europe and ride again. I also Madeira I've heard is incredible as well.
No sheep, but they love their beef there.
Yes, there's lots of cows. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
in Madeira.
Yeah, yeah. They're like big beef country.
Is that what they're known for? I mean, I saw lots of cows.
So. I watched a documentary once. That's the only reason I know.
Yeah, it was a super cool island, and I actually am sort of hopeful maybe that one of the World Cups is going to be at Madeira.
That'd be sick.
And then you get to go back there. But I was really hoping that they would have some South America stops. I'd like to go back and race in South America.
It'd be cool for South America too.
Yeah.
There's so many cool riders down there who don't get much opportunity.
Are you thinking you would want to do more trans BC, trans Madeira, trans South America?
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of different ones.
I'm kind of on the fence with like wanting to do more or not. I think it's sort of that same thought process of like, is it something new? Like trans BC is like, I know that Megan puts on like a killer race, but like I could just go ride in BC a lot. And it, you know, I could go ride in Madeira, but like there's just certain things I feel like would just be more fun to go just do with your friends and chill and not have this like steep entry cost or just like
be attached to a race.
Yeah. And like even doing Madeira, like there was like some times where I was just like, I don't feel like I'm racing at all. Like I'm just going down this trail. And I think
because the whole thing's blind.
Well, the whole thing's blind, which, you know, you can definitely like push yourself. Or I felt like there was definitely times where I was like pushing myself blind and it was really fun. But then there's like other times where you're just like, I'm so tired and I didn't sleep last night. And like, you just are like not into the whole like race focus. And for 5 days, it's kind of hard. And like, I think some people like Marco has like a really good ability to do that. And I don't really know if that's like, something I want to really push myself to do. So like people are like, oh, do you want to do Stone King Rally? And I'm like, not really, honestly, like, I don't know. It just seems like a lot. And trying to race that, maybe I'll have a change of heart, but I think for now I might do like one more, but it's not going to be like, I'm not going to do
it's
like
not going to become your thing.
Yeah, it's not going
to
like,
you're not going to add it to the circuit.
Let's hope we see you at more Crankworks. That'll be fun.
Yeah, I would be. I'm definitely thinking about it. I think just like seeing how everything shapes up, and I'm kind of thinking right now preliminary that I'll ask for another leave of absence so that I can do more racing in the spring. So I was able to get a student teacher last year, which really made me feel good about not being there because the kids had somebody steady and then the school district had somebody steady. So I think if I could do something like that and maybe just do like April and May, but then that also gives me the opportunity to like really chase some more mountain biking stuff that it's, you know, it's decently hard to do that when, you're at school in April and May.
So I guess, what does the future of mountain biking look like to you? Like in your eyes, are you envisioning yourself, you know, because I mean, you're doing really great with the racing aspect of it. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, like, do you feel like, oh man, there's really something I can, like, more I need to do and for X amount along, or, you know, yeah. What is your vision for yourself? What are some of your goals that you want to accomplish?
I mean, I think it always keeps evolving for me. Like, you know, if you would have asked me a couple years ago if I'd be doing this right now, I probably would have been like, oh no, I think I'd be done by then. So I think every year, like, I keep getting better and keep getting, like, really good results, and that is kind of like what keeps driving me forward. Like, I don't want it to be all results based, but, like, I just want to feel like I'm still improving as a rider, and as long as I'm making those gains, like, I think I'll keep at it and keep pushing. I think next year, like, yeah, I really do want to take a stab at some more World Cup Enduros, and, like, I know that I have the pace, but just, like, putting it together and, like, trying to get into the top 10 would be really, really cool. And then I think also, like, just doing some new stuff like Crankworx, and, like, there's obviously, like, a huge learning opportunity there. And, like, you know, seeing, like, Martha Gill, who has moved over from Enduro to Crankworx, and, like, how much she's improved, like, is really cool to see. And, like, not saying that, like, I'm trying to, like, do that exactly, but, like, you know, just I think just trying to keep improving and just doing new things and, like, keeping it exciting is sort of where I'm at. And yeah, that could be, like, definitely next year, maybe the year after. I think being with Transition, sort of, like, them supporting whatever I'm doing is, like, really nice, because I don't feel like, oh, like, they only see me as a racer. And I think, like, down the road, if I, like, wanted to step back from racing a bit, like, I think they would be supportive of that. And
that was going to be my second question was, you know, when you do decide, like, I don't feel like I want to continue the stress or whatever, you know, that's associated with racing, you know, what are some areas that you think that you could see yourself in mountain biking, like, content creation, or you know, just continuing coaching, expanding on that?
I think probably expanding a bit on the coaching. I think there's, like, a need there for sure, and I think, like, I enjoy it and have done a little bit of it already, so I think maybe doing more of that, and, like, yeah, kind of trying to be, like, a mentor for some of these, like, we have so many young girls coming up, and I think it'd be really cool to sort of help them with that and you know, be a coach, mentor sort of position. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just sticking with it in that regard, and maybe, like, showing up and doing, like, a few events a year, but not having it be, like, my bread and butter of just racing all the time.
Yeah.
It's cool to see that mountain biking is expanding in that way too, that there's, like, lots of opportunities for those of us that are in the sport to do different things.
Yeah.
And, like, when you stop racing, there'll be plenty of stuff for you to be involved with, brands and sponsors and the community and and stuff. So
yeah, I think there's you can take it as far in whatever direction you want, you know, as an athlete. I think that if you are a charismatic and likable person and a very you kind of have your head on your shoulders, you can sort of always find a place with somebody who aligns with your vision, you know. And you know, so it is, I think, you know, important. It's really interesting. You know, I there are other athletes that I know personally who have, you know, ridden Red Bull Joyride, you know, back in the day, and then they transitioned to content creation, and then they transitioned to, you know, content creation in the sense of, like, traveling for magazines and whatnot, and then moving into YouTube and sort of finding their niche in different areas. And there's always been somebody there to support them along the way, you know? And so I think, you know, what you're doing is unique, and, you know, I love seeing you follow whatever it is that makes you feel excited and happy and fulfilled. And, you know, as a brand or as, like, a company that, like, sponsors you, it's like, I don't care what you're doing. If you start placing last place, dead last in every single race, which I don't anticipate is going to happen or want, like, hope that doesn't happen for you. It doesn't matter to me. Like, you know, like,
thank God for that for some of us.
Like, you know, it, I just think that you are a wonderful human being that is looking out for something else other than just, you know, yourself. I'm a professional mountain biker. Yeah. Look
it's
at me.
It's cool to see that the full spectrum of Amy Mo.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Compared to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Deep respect.
Thanks. Yeah. And I think if you just stick to that like passion and like what drives you, I think you'll kind of find those avenues like after you finish like racing or whatever it is. Like if you still have a love for the sport, like there's, like you said, a number of different ways you can go. And I think as long as you're true to that and not just like doing it because you want the sponsorship, then yeah, something will come of it for sure.
Yeah.
Cause like in my head, it's not even like, I wouldn't want to just like mentor somebody just cause I want like continued support. Like I would just do it because like I would want to help that person.
Yeah.
And,
To give back in a way that you also receive some form of support. When we had Alan on, he talked about that same thing. He was like, you know, now that he's in this position that he can give back to other up and coming athletes and help lift them into a career, you know, the same way people in front of him did that, you know, that is important. And that's really, you know, makes him feel like he's giving back in a way that is meaningful, you know?
Yeah. And I think in general too, it's like when you bring the level up around you, it's just going to help everybody get better. And like, I traveled a lot with Kate Lawrence, who's another top American enduro rider. And like, yeah, like we shared a lot and like, I don't mind like sharing her, like, this is what I would do. And like, you know, I think you should rest today. Not, you know, because I think that's what's best for you. And like, this is how I mentally approach this and like sharing those things with her because, you know, she's 10 years younger than me and she's like, yeah, really going for it. And like, nothing would be cooler to me than having her like represent the US and be like on a World Cup podium. And like, yeah, like even at nationals, I knew that the competition was going to be a lot between like her and I. And it's like, you know, like would I have been, you know, a little like, oh shoot, like I didn't win. But like if Kate won, like, it's like, okay, I've been like helping her and like, yeah, I'm stoked for her and like seeing her progress is like, and I think like that is like really cool because at some point I'm not going to be the fastest anymore. And it's like, if you can have a part in helping somebody else,
That's so then cool.
It makes it less like harsh when you don't win anymore. You're like, well, I helped them. Yeah. So, and like, yeah, I would love like the French and the British are so dominant in enduro. And I would like love to see that, like see these American girls like start pushing into the top 10 and being on the podium. Like, even if it's not me, like I would just love to see some other girls from the US representing. So, yeah.
Well, Doug, where are we at?
Hour 36.
Hour 36.
That's okay. Time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Amy, thank you for coming on. It's
thanks
probably
for
a good place.
Me.
I would love to keep talking. Honestly, I feel like we could just keep going and going and going.
Nuggets in there.
Yeah. And honestly, having you back on in the future would be really great. I really look forward to watching your career and how things unfold, both personally and the teaching side of things and the riding side of things. And so, you know, love to keep touching back in. Over
time. Well, hopefully I'll be back up a lot more. I mean, that's always the plan.
Yeah.
Half your sponsors are up here. So.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, I'd love to get back up and come back on.
So. Yeah, yeah. So thank you again for coming by. Everyone, thank you for tuning in. If you want to follow along with Amy's with her racing career and everything that she's up to, you can follow with your Instagram, Amy Mo.
Amy Mo _11.
There you go. So we'll catch you guys next time. Peace out.
Thanks, guys.
Goodbye.